We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
For the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3.
Keep pounding.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire to help us preview this week's upcoming opponent, the Washington football team. I'm happy to be joined once again. Many of you remember him from last year, Mark Bullock. And Mark, you can find him on Twitter at MarkBullockNFL. Does a really good job covering the football team. And you can also, for more of his content, subscribe to his Substack as well. And Mark, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It seems like it's becoming an annual thing now between the football team and the Carolina Panthers. I think they've played the last 3 years now. They're Ron Rivera's final game with the Panthers was against the football team and in 2019. And last year, we know how the game was essentially like the end of like the Dwayne Haskins era.
Yeah.
And now it's a little different for Washington. But, you know, I was watching the game last week and they really seemed to take it to Tampa up front. And I was really impressed with just like, not necessarily like some of the star players that you think of, like a Chase Young, but a lot of people don't mention him, even though they're in a very big market. But John Allen has to be like one of the best interior, defensive linemen in the NFL. And if to me, he was just completely wrecking havoc on Tampa's interior offensive line, which is very good.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely. I said last year, and I caught a bit of flack for saying it, that he was the best defensive lineman on that really talented front. But he just didn't have the production that he's had this year in terms of sack numbers that everyone looks for. But in terms of his general play and his technique and stuff, he's always been very sound technically. He's always produced very good pressure numbers. And this year, after getting a big contract extension in the offseason, the very positive thing for Washington is that he hasn't done the thing that a lot of players do. They get their money and they kind of fall off a little bit. Allen has taken another step forward. And as you say, I think he's probably one of the better interior defensive linemen in the league. Certainly, he's been Washington's best defensive player. And the pressure he's been generating, and not just the pressure, but in the run defense, he's very stout against the run as well. Just his all-round game is really superb. And as you say, against Tampa, they really took to him and they got behind Allen and he really set the tone early on the Bucs had their opening third down and Allen beat Ali Marpet really quickly and landed a big hit on Brady and that really set the tone for the defense and really helped them settle in and play better than they have done for large parts of the season.
So yeah, I think in recent weeks, I'm not sure when it started, maybe you can give a little better insight, but this defense has been playing a little better recently. And I think they caught a lot of flack earlier in the year. There were so many busted coverages. Yeah. I mean, they were giving up tons of just
silly yards. And I think the defensive coordinator, Jack Del Rio, came under a little scrutiny, but it seems like I don't know. What have you seen from this defensive improvement over the past few weeks? And when do you think it kind of started?
It definitely has gotten better over the last few weeks. A lot of their issues were communication issues, where they had quite a few new members of the secondary, and even people that were here last year were playing different spots. The guys that kind of held over, Kendall Fuller moved into the slot to start the season, and Cam Curl was a rookie last year that broke out and had a really good year at safety, and he's taking on more responsibility. And Landon Collins, he was here last year, but he got injured and he missed kind of half the season with a torn Achilles, and has come back and is playing a different role this year. And then they've got Bobby McCain. They signed William Jackson, who's had his issues, and they drafted Benjamin St. Juice. So they've got quite a lot of new faces on the back end, and they've taken a little bit to get used to all the different calls and get used to each other and the signals that and calls that they make to each other. And that led to a lot of coverage busts. William Jackson in particular, that their price free agent acquisition has had his struggles and really not gone on the same page. And you've seen quite a lot of coverage busts early in this year when he was in the lineup and not sure what he was doing. So a few weeks ago, he missed some time with injury. He came back against the Bucks, but he missed a few weeks injured. And Washington seemed to kind of simplify things a little bit. They moved Kendall Fuller back outside from the slot. They put Danny Johnson, a young corner that they've had on the roster for a while. They put him in the slot, and they played things a little bit simpler, a little bit more basic zone coverages. And that seemed to get everyone on the same page a little bit better. And that helped, you know, prevent those huge coverage busts that we were seeing every week for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. So, they're certainly doing a little bit better now. And they were able to not necessarily do too much confusing things against the Bucks. They tried some different things, but it wasn't too complex. It wasn't anything that would really get players on the wrong page and create more coverage busts. So, but they were being a little bit more experimental and trying a few different things against the Bucks. So it'll be interesting to see this week if they go back to staying a little bit more simple, or if they try to integrate some more kind of different things that might lead to some more coverage busts.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think, you know, the NFL is obviously the highest of elite competition in the world when it comes to football. But I think I was listening to Coach Fass, and he said this on his show a couple of times, is playing defense is hard. And the reason why you see so many like of these college programs like the Saban and Wisconsin with Jim Leonard employ so many like diverse coverages is because they have those players for 4 years, or at least 3 years. And so they can kind of get acclimated to the terminology and the language, so they can do a lot more confusing stuff. That's why you see a lot of coaches on Twitter, they love watching defensive film. But in the NFL, because like turnover is so high among personnel, you have to, I think it's smart to, you know, maybe have some, you know, diversity, but I just think keeping it simple is really like the key for any good defense. And I think this one in particular, Washington, which has a strong front, if you just give, you know, the guys in the back end some, you know, not necessarily taper down their responsibilities, but just keep it simple, then they can really start to really see some dividends at least.
Yeah, for sure. And the point you make about colleges having guys for 3 or 4 years, like the thing that Ron Rivera keeps pointing to is he points to the Bills, and obviously the links between the Bills and Ron Rivera. I mean, you guys in Carolina would know that better than anyone. He keeps pointing to how all their players in the secondary have been there for 3 or 4 years. And that's why that Bills secondary is so good, because guys like Jordan Poyer and all of that group have all been there for that long. They've all been in the system. They all know the calls. They all know each other so well. And that's the the thing that Washington are aiming to become, I guess, in a way, is what the Bills are defensively. But it does take time to get there. And as you say, you sometimes have to simplify things a little bit to get everyone on the same page and then prevent lots of coverage busts like Washington had earlier in the year.
No, for sure. I think Sean McDermott's final year in Carolina, 2016, they had two rookie starting corners, Bradbury, who's obviously a really good player now, and the other one was Daryl Worley, and they had some other inexperienced guys. But the beginning of the year, I don't know if you remember, they gave up like 300 yards to like Julio Jones in Atlanta. But by the end of the year, they were like a top 10 defense because they just made their lives a lot more simpler and didn't really ask them to play some of the complex coverages that they usually employ. Yeah. So I'm totally with you there. So let's go back to the defensive line, but I want to stick here with the edge rushers because obviously it's unfortunate what happened to Chase Young. Montez Sweat seemed to have surgery on a jaw, at least from
my... Yeah, I don't think he's had surgery, but it's a broken jaw that doesn't require surgery, but it means he's having to have time out for something like 3 to 5 weeks as it heals.
So talk to me about Casey Tuhill and Shaka Tony. I was a fan of Tony coming out of Penn State, but he has a pretty unique skill set. He's more of like a speed rusher, at least from what I saw at when he was in college. But it seemed like Tuhill played pretty well, judging from some of the local reaction.
Yeah, they like Casey Tuhill. Rivera referred to him quite a lot as a good dropper, as someone that they can drop into coverage. And I think that's something that we'll see from Washington, certainly this week and going forward, without those two big names, Chase Young and Montez Sweat, as you mentioned. I think they will try to make up for that by having those kind of edge guys. Shaka Tony, as you mentioned, he is kind of a speed rusher, but he did play some linebacker in college as well and has the ability to drop back into coverage. Casey Tuhill, we saw a couple of times against the Bucks. They had him peel off and drop into coverage. I think we'll probably see more simulated pressure with those guys dropping off into coverage and maybe some linebackers like Cole Holcomb or Jamin Davis or even Landon Collins kind of blitzing up the middle or adding on to the rush along with the interior guys and try to attack some protection schemes rather than kind of rely on, well, our front four guys are better than your pass protectors, so we'll trust those front four to win with a few little stunts here and there. I think they'll have to start scheming things up a little bit more. And we saw when Chase Young went out against Tampa Bay, we saw that they had to kind of blitz a little bit more. I don't think they'll just resort to the kind of obvious of we'll just play more man coverage and blitz constantly. That's not really what they do, but they used a lot of different fire zones or zone blitzes where they would rush five, they'd bring a fifth rusher from somewhere and drop into three deep zones and three underneath zones as a relatively safe blitz. And we'll see, as I said, some sim pressures where it's only four men rushing, but you don't really know where those four guys are coming from, and it's designed to get the protection schemes like all set to block the four defensive linemen, and then a defensive end drops out from one side and a corner comes off the edge from the other or something like that. And I think that's kind of how they'll try to replace the likes of Sweat and Chase Young rather than just relying on Casey Tuhill and Shaka Tony and the couple of other guys that they have. I think they'll be trying to dial up a few more different blitzes and schemes to replace that pressure.
Panthers fans, football is back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Panthers tickets anymore, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site, and the only one you'll ever need is your go-to for all NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of those awful service fees that the other ticket services charge, which lets them guarantee the best pricing on all of their tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find a better price for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. It's a great time to be a Panthers fan. Cam Newton is back in the building. The defense is playing lights out. Get over to TickPick.com/roar right now to save 10% on your first order of Panthers tickets. Again, that's tickpick.com/roar.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Del Rio, he's done a lot of these fire zone blitzes before. I noticed it last year too, when I was leading up to the Panthers game. So it's something that Carolina should have a pretty decent experience with. The linebackers, first round pick Jamin Davis, it seems like he's had a little bit of struggles early, which is pretty typical for rookie linebackers. I think you're seeing it now. And with a, I think at Pittsburgh, they're having some questions about their guy they drafted on the top 10 a couple years ago. And Cole Holcomb, he seems to be, a lot of people remember him from this era. He went to UNC. He seems to be one of the more consistent players in the linebacking unit. But what do you make of the first round pick Davis's season so far and just the other linebackers on the roster?
Yeah, it's a pretty thin group. Davis definitely had a really slow start. And I think that came from that they might have tried to put a little bit too much on his plate too soon. For me, watching Davis coming out, I thought he was a will linebacker. And you just play him at that weak side and you let him roam a little bit freely and use that athleticism. But Washington kind of decided that they wanted him to be their Mike linebacker, and they wanted him to try to make the calls. And obviously they had some kind of basis of reason for that, but you could see in preseason when he was playing, he was definitely a step slower than everyone else off the snap. And he was always thinking rather than reacting and just playing. And that carried over into the season. And so he hardly played to start the season. But then John Bostic, the guy that was playing the Mike spot when Davis wasn't ready, he got injured and was out for the year. So they didn't really have anyone else. And they've tried a few different things. They've tried a five defensive linemen, five defensive backs, and one linebacker personnel group, with Cole Holcomb being the only linebacker. And they can do that because they have Landon Collins and Cam Curl, who are both safeties that work in the box and kind of hybrid linebacker safety kind of roles. So they've tried to fill that in with that. But over the last few weeks, we've seen Jamin Davis kind of start to settle in a little bit more, start to get up to speed, play a little bit more reactionary rather than just sitting and thinking about, okay, where is this going? Is that definitely a handoff or is it a play action fake and all those kind of things? You can see him playing a little bit more naturally. It's still not where you'd want it to be, certainly not from a first round pick, but he's coming along and he's starting to step up and make some plays here and there.
Well, that's encouraging. As long as the natural progression gets better and better, that thing is what I want to see from a young player like him. Moving over to the offensive side of the ball, I want to start with the trenches because I was pretty impressed watching them, especially that 10-minute drive. And this is a unit that, they were coached by Bill Callahan a couple years ago, but there's been a lot of questions around some of the talent, Brandon Scherff aside. And, for me, I was sort of impressed with the interior. And again, Scherff, we obviously know, is one of the best guards in the NFL. But the left guard, I was pretty impressed with, and that's Eric Flowers, who's had sort of his best years in the NFL have come in Washington, which is kind of funny. And then I believe former Carolina Panther Tyler Larson was starting this past week.
Chase Roullier is the starting center typically, but he was injured last week and was out for the season. So Larson has taken over. Yeah.
So another Carolina Washington connection. I mean, Larson's a pretty solid backup and spot start, so I'm not surprised to see him do pretty well. But and you guys obviously you signed Leno in the offseason, and Cornelius Lucas, I believe, was one of their highest graded players according to PFF last week. So what do you make of this offensive line, and how do you think they've sort of performed throughout the year?
It's been probably the strongest unit of the team, certainly on offense, and that is somewhat of a surprise because it's kind of a mix and match of parts, and they've had a fair few injuries. As we mentioned, Chase Roullier, the starting center, he got a new contract going into the year, and he was playing phenomenally well before he got injured and is out for the year. Tyler Larson, as you said, stepped in and played pretty well against the Bucks. Brandon Scherff's missed some time at right guard, as he's kind of been prone to do throughout his career. But where Schweitzer, that they signed in 2020, stepped in, and I think he's one of the better performing run blockers in the league right now.
They're pretty deep.
Yeah, they are very deep. They had Sam Cosmi was their second round pick starting at right tackle. He got hurt, and as you say, Cornelius Lucas took over at right tackle, and he's been playing well. And Eric Flowers, that they traded back. He played in Washington a few years ago and when he converted to guard, and then signed a big contract with Miami, and then the Dolphins traded him back to Washington this year, and he's performing well and as the starting left guard. So across the board and up and down the depth chart, they've been playing very well. And it's a credit to the offensive line coach and the game plan that Scott Turner keeps putting together, that group has played really well, regardless of who's been on it. It's been, because as I say, there's been so many moving parts, and Schweitz has come in at guard, and Lucas has come in at right tackle, and they had a rep a few weeks ago where they had Sadiq Charles playing right tackle, and all sorts of different injuries up front, and they've just kept going, and they've still been able to run the ball pretty well. They still pass protected pretty well. So for me, it's been the strength of the offense has been that offensive line. And it's been a surprise because, as you say, it's not filled with first-round picks bar Brandon Scherff. It's a bunch of mid-round guys that have kind of developed very well in this system.
No, I'm glad to hear that because the offensive line coach for Washington is John Matsko. He was my favorite coach when he was in Carolina. The work he did with the offensive line here with some of the worst players, with all due respect, I'm not going to name any. I mean, the work he was able to do just patching up pretty bad players and making them at least below average, I thought was very underrated. And I'm not surprised that Rivera took him to Washington. He's one of the better offensive line coaches that I've seen in action. I used to go to training camp. I used to watch him teach. And I mean, it seems like one of the more, he's not like a guy who's going to get in your face and yell at you like you see some other coaches, more of a much more calm tempered, and kind of, I guess that, you know, his teaching ways have obviously translated pretty well for the Washington offensive line. You know, skill player wise, I'm very interested to see how, you know, they deploy like their, you know, where they deploy guys and how they use them. But first off, what do you think the status is of Logan Thomas?
So he's kind of been week to week. He's been injured for a while. And I think today, or the day of recording, he wasn't practicing or was off on a side field. And that typically for Washington this season has meant that the player won't play during the week, at the weekend. If they get to Wednesday or Thursday and they're still only practicing on the side field, they typically don't go. So I would not necessarily expect Logan Thomas unless he makes a miraculous turnaround over the next few days.
I also noticed that Ricky Seals-Jones, he got injured in that game. Is he going to be okay, or is he like done for the year?
I don't think he's done for the year, but I think he is out for a few weeks. I think he's got kind of a muscle injury that I don't think it's one that he just gets over. I think it's one that will take a few weeks for him to recover from. So it seems like they're probably going to be pretty thin at tight end, which they already were. Once Logan Thomas got injured, it was quite a surprise that Ricky Seals-Jones had played so well when Thomas went down. And it was looking like it was going to be able to get Thomas back and have a solid two tight end set, but now they're back down to having very little there.
So it seems like John Bates, the rookie from Boise State.
Yep.
I liked watching him, and the guy they signed from the international program, I believe, the Chilean, Samis Reyes?
Yeah, Samis Reyes.
Samis Reyes.
The Chilean, he'd never played football before, but he shined in a few workouts in the off season. And Washington,
he's a basketball player, right?
He was a basketball player in college. I think he's something like 6'5", 255 or 260 or something like that. And in amazing shape, tested about as good as a tight end could possibly test. And so Washington took a gamble there, and you know, I'm not expecting much from him if he even plays, because he's never played football before, and that was pretty obvious when watching him in preseason. He really struggled, kind of knowing what his assignment was, which I guess you would expect from a guy that's never played football. But even when the parts that you'd want to see from him, where he's out running routes and running by people with his speed and using his athleticism to make catches, he didn't particularly shine there either. So as good as the story is, he hasn't shown anything to suggest that it's more than just a good story at this point.
Yeah, for sure. So it seems like Bates is probably going to be in line for a healthy amount of snaps this week, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
So let's kind of look at the receivers now. I mean, we all know Terry McLaurin is one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best receivers in the NFL. Unfortunately, he doesn't get that notoriety because of quarterback play and some unfortunate situations involving that position. But I mean, just it's not only his route running, it's his toughness. And I don't think anything kind of better encapsulates that than that third down reception he made, where I don't know, like maybe you can kind of give me a better sense since you watch a lot of tape. Well, I thought the throw could have been, he could have protected him a little better there, but it just speaks to McLaurin's toughness that he was able to still catch it, hang on, and take the hit as well.
Yeah, he probably could have protected him a little more, maybe try to look off that safety a little bit more rather than kind of Heineke kind of stared it down pretty much from the snap. I think it was pretty obvious at that point, third and five, there was only really one guy they were going to. And especially when they sent the slot receiver in motion and the defender followed him, it was kind of confirmed it was man coverage at that point. I think it was only ever going to Terry McLaurin. So Heineke probably could have done a little bit better job holding safety in the middle rather than leading him straight to McLaurin. But as you say, it speaks to McLaurin's toughness. I really don't know how he held onto that ball. It was a huge hit, and it was quite outstanding that he pulled in the catch, secured it, and picked up that first down, and was even able to bounce back up and continue playing afterwards.
You know, it's funny because I feel like McLaurin is like more, you know, he's only in his third year, but he's like the veteran of this group. Because I mean, while Humphreys, he's been in the league for a while, he's more of like a, you know, rotational slot option, but there are other guys like Brown, Millen, and DeAndre Carter are young guys. What can you kind of tell me about this group as a whole and how they kind of deploy them?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see because they signed Curtis Samuel, who you guys will be obviously familiar with. Yeah, but he's missed basically the entire year, bar 20 snaps in one game in something like week four. He's been injured. He's had kind of a mysterious either groin or hamstring injury or something that's kept him out the entire year. And I think they've been missing that. But De'Ami Brown was the rookie that they drafted in the third round. He had some early good looks, but he's kind of struggled of late and he's had a few injuries that have slowed him down a bit. DeAndre Carter's been really the find because he was kind of a guy they just signed really as a punt returner and a kick returner. And they had so many injuries earlier in the year that he had to play some, and he's looked pretty good as a kind of a slot option, almost a cheap Curtis Samuel in terms of skill set, being able to be elusive in the open field and make guys miss and work nicely out of the slot and play some outside. He's kind of playing that kind of role. But yeah, the receiving group is kind of a bit thin, especially behind McLaurin. They've been kind of making up for that by using the backs. And I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Turner scheme where the backs are very heavily involved. And
yeah.
JD McKissick out of the backfield, he was a receiver in college, and he's been kind of used as a movable piece and a little bit of a slot option, a little bit of a running back and a third down back. Antonio Gibson has, over the last few weeks, seen his role expand a little bit from just being a running back to moving outside and playing a bit of receiver too. So they're trying to make up for a little bit of lack of depth at receiver or lack of top end threat at receiver by adding in those backs and getting the most out of those backs as well.
So what do you think about everyone, the entire fantasy community's favorite running back, Jarrett Patterson?
I loved him in preseason. I still believe he's probably Washington's most natural running back in terms of how he reads through the different styles of runs that Washington does and the paths that he takes and how he sets up blocks. But it's hard for them to give an undrafted free agent running back more carries than either their prime third down back in McKissick, or obviously their big investment in the third round pick of a year ago in Antonio Gibson. And it's not like those guys are struggling either. So those guys are playing well. I still like Patterson. I'd still like to see him get a little bit more of a shot, but I think he will at some point, especially as Gibson is dealing with, he's got a hairline fracture in his shin that he's been dealing with all year. So he's kind of been managing that, but he's still playing pretty well, and you wouldn't really notice that he's struggling with that. But they've been trying over the last few weeks to give Patterson a little bit more of a run, just to give Gibson a bit of a breather here and there.
Yeah, you know, when I watched Washington last year, the thing that really annoyed me, and I think he's a great quarterback, Alex Smith just checked down to McKissick way too much for my liking. I don't think Heinicke is kind of going overboard with that, is he?
No, he's I mean, a lot of the stuff is schemed up to the backs, and especially when there are receivers that they don't necessarily have the receivers that they want in Curtis Samuel or De'Ami Brown's been missing and that kind of thing. When they don't have that second punch, or Logan Thomas is another option that they've been missing. So when they don't have those guys, they kind of involve those backs a little bit more. So no, it's not been the same case of Alex Smith last year, where he would maybe check McLaurin and then instantly check it down to a McKissick. It's not quite been that. But they certainly, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't have the numbers to hand, but I wouldn't be surprised if the numbers are still fairly heavily weighted towards the backs, because they've been moving those guys around and using them in the passing game more.
For sure. So close out the offense with the quarterback, Taylor Heinicke. And, you know, when I first saw him play for Carolina, I didn't really think much of him. I wasn't a huge fan of his. I thought Kyle Allen, who I was pretty critical of when he was here, I thought Kyle had a lot more physical traits, just his ability to kind of stand in the pocket and take some throws and really push the ball downfield. I thought we saw that in the preseason here in 2018 and 19 as well. But I mean, Heinicke, he's been, you know, he's kind of performing, I guess, admirably, for lack of a better term. And, you know, during the draft year, everyone always, you know, gets upset when like one of the big analysts, like a Mike Tannenbaum on ESPN, goes and says, you know, build is important. And I do think it is, especially for quarterback, because, you know, the issue with Heinicke in Carolina was he was pretty frail. Like anytime you hit him, like he'd be injured. But it seems like he's done a pretty good job of being durable this year. And, you know, one guy it reminds me of, I don't know, you've probably taken a close look at him because he was your quarterback recently, but I don't know if you remember when Case Keenum was like the Houston starter in like 2013. It was a while ago when Gary Kubiak's last year. And it's sort of like Heinicke is playing kind of reminds me of that. Like a guy who you can obviously win games with, but there is a little bit of a chaotic nature to him too, where he's kind of, he kind of freelances and does some of his own work. And I mean, hey, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But what has been your assessment of Heinicke thus far?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. Certainly, I didn't think much of him when they signed him late in the season, and then he had that outstanding game against the Bucks. But my biggest concern, as you kind of alluded to, was the injuries, because up until this season, he hadn't managed to complete an NFL game without getting injured. So I think he had a big point of emphasis this offseason to kind of bulk up a little bit, and he came in much better shape, and that certainly helped him. And he's also made a hugely conscious effort to protect himself when he's running and scrambling around. He's given up a lot of yards to make sure he slides early and protects himself. And that was kind of seen a few weeks ago when he slid in for the, or dived for the touchdown, but kind of gave himself up a little bit short and they didn't score because of it against the Packers. He's protecting himself and he's bulked up, so he's become a little bit more durable. In terms of his actual play, it's kind of a bit of a roller coaster. There are times when, as you say, he'll go off script, and I think that's when he's at his best, when he's allowed to freelance a little bit and go off script and make things happen. But he's not a Patrick Mahomes or a Russell Wilson that, when he does that, more often than not, it's going to work out. Like, you have to accept with a guy like Taylor Heinicke, when he goes off script, there are going to be times when, or at least half the time when he does that, it's not going to work out, and you have to accept that. So that has kind of been part of the issue with him. I'm not one to look at frame and arm strength particularly, but it's been noticeable on throws, apart from this week against the Bucks, to his credit. He was better with this week, but most of the season his ball placement has been late and behind receivers, but especially when he's throwing those outs to the sideline, the lack of arm strength kind of shows, and the ball's kind of floaty and behind, and that's kind of a recipe for disaster when throwing out to the sideline. And he could have been intercepted a few more times than he has been. So, to his credit, against the Bucks this week, he was much better at those throws and making sure they were outside and away from defenders and had a little bit more juice on them. So he's kind of up and down week to week. You never really know which guy you're going to get. A few weeks ago, people were talking about benching him for Kyle Allen. And then even after kind of the second quarter against the Bucks, there was people on Twitter asking to bench him or saying we need to bench him. And then he played the way he did in the second half, and particularly in that fourth quarter. You think, well, maybe there's something there. For me, he's kind of a good backup level quarterback, a guy that, in that system, he knows the system inside out. And if your number one quarterback does go down, you're comfortable with him coming in for three or four or five games, and you have a chance to win with him if the defense plays well, and you can lean on the running game as well. But he's not, I don't think he's ever going to be the guy, the one that you're going, yeah, this is our quarterback and we're building around him, and we believe he is going to win us a Super Bowl. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree with that. I think the same way about Kyle Allen, but it does kind of speak that Washington has a pretty deep quarterback room, for whatever it's worth. But obviously you need the guy to improve substantially. Yep. I want to close out here with just Scott Turner on the offense. I think you wrote in your Substack here that, you're really impressed with some of the kind of the screens, the RPOs, jet motions, and kind of how he was able to get creative, especially in that final drive. Yep. What has been your impression of his offense and kind of how he's been able to maybe kind of use the talent that he has at his disposal?
Yeah, I think it's been very interesting, especially my knowledge base of the NFL has always been in the West Coast offense, and particularly from the kind of Shanahan tree with Kyle Shanahan and then Sean McVay here in Washington, and Jay Gruden's offense kind of was pretty similar.
Right.
So I had 10 years of that, and this offense is very different. Those McVay and Shanahan's offenses were all about the zone run scheme and the play action off of it, and then your typical West Coast short passing game. Whereas Jay Gruden was a little bit more of a downfield West Coast passing game guy, and Scott Turner is very different. He likes to have his handful of concepts that, from my experience anyway, he likes to have his kind of handful of five to ten core concepts that the quarterback is comfortable with and familiar with. And then he'll dress them up in as many different ways as possible with various formations and motions and shifts and all this kind of thing to keep the defense from knowing what's coming. And then suddenly it's the same concept and it's a very easy read for the quarterback because he's run the concept 100 times a season. So that has kind of been my experience with it. And for me, it works to a degree. It's for me, it's very similar to what I've seen from Kellen Moore in Dallas. But when you have a quarterback like Dak Prescott that can read the defense and adjust the scheme and adjust the play at the line of scrimmage to get them in the right play, it works a lot better. And that's not to say Heinicke hasn't known the offense and hasn't adjusted plays here and there. He has, but obviously having an elite guy like Dak run that system, it makes it work a lot better. So, it's been a very interesting transition for me, from going from that system to this one. But I do think he does a pretty good job of spreading out the defense. Certainly this year, it's been a lot more cohesive. I think in his first year in 2020, he was still getting to know exactly what he had in certain players. And it kind of felt like he had four or five different packages that were all quite nice, but they didn't really commingle so well. Whereas this year, he's still got maybe three or four packages that are good and nice, but this year he's blended them well. And you can see that a lot of the play action passes work off the different run concepts that are working for them. You can see that some of the different passing concepts come from different looks that look like other passing concepts, and he's dressing them up and making them work together much more nicely, and it's a much better flowing offense than it was last year. So it's far more cohesive this year, and I think that just comes from knowing your talent and personnel more and understanding what they can and can't do.
Yeah, well, the Turners, they were pretty creative in how they kind of attacked defenses when they were here in Carolina, especially when Cam was healthy in 2018. That was arguably very close to what we saw during Newton's MVP year in 2015, but it was just much more expansive as far as their ability to use pre-snap motion, play action. To the Shanahan or McVay level, but they did a really good job of creating deception among the second level of the defense, and it just created a lot of explosive plays, which is the ultimate goal. As we close out here, I was really impressed with Ron Rivera's kind of game management on Sunday, because there were a couple times in the past, at least I remember, where he kind of maybe went the more conservative route, but this week, especially late in the game, when just the way they were managing the clock, and that 10-minute drive is a testament to just your organization you have on the field, because you're getting lined up, you're snapping the ball correctly, you're not committing pre-snap penalties, and then the decision to go for it on fourth and goal. I mean, I know Brady's one of the best ever at coming back, but I don't think he's ever let a 99-yard drive in under 30 seconds. So I was impressed with that decision. And then obviously they did something else smart, which not many people remember, when he took the knee to prevent the, an extra point being returned, which for 2 points. So what's been kind of your impression of his just game management, whether it's fourth down decisions and just clock management as a whole?
Yeah, it certainly improved throughout the year. It's been better this year than it was last year. Last year, there were some questionable things, certainly at the start of last year. And there were some people wondering whether he was dealing with cancer at the start of last year. And right. Some people were wondering whether that was impacting his decision making and things on the field. During the games, especially late in games, that there was times when he had timeouts to use and could have stopped the clock and didn't, and things like that. This year it's been better. There's still been times where it's kind of been an iffy decision whether to go for it on fourth down or kick field goals. And, with his nickname being Riverboat Ron, the kind of perception or the expectation is he's going to go for it more often than not. And that hasn't necessarily been the case, but certainly against the Bucks, that fourth quarter drive was phenomenal, and it spoke to the coaching and the discipline of the team. So it's hard to go on a 19 play 80 yard drive and not have any,
especially to close the game out. I mean, we saw the 49ers do it on Monday night, but that was a scripted drive.
Exactly. Yeah, this was to close the game out, and they didn't have any penalties that set them back. They never had any kind of real explosive plays. It was all dink and dunks or small runs, but they just kept moving the chains, keep staying ahead of the chains and making the conversions on third and short or third and medium when they had to. And that spoke to me. It said a lot about what Scott Turner was able to do. He was really smart in how he was moving the clock. Obviously, that Tampa front is very, very stout in the middle, and it's hard to run on them. So Turner was doing things like RPOs to have safe runs with, and safe passing options. He was throwing screens every now and again. He even threw in a reverse to DeAndre Carter. So it was all different ways of picking up some yards, but still completing safe passes when they did pass the ball, or give different run looks to the defense rather than just your kind of standard zone run up the middle or whatever. So he did a really nice job with that. And as you say, that decision to take a knee on the extra point was surprised everyone. Nobody really quite understood it. And it wasn't until Rivera explained afterwards that if they had on the small chance that there was a blocked field goal, blocked extra point, and the Bucks ran it back, it would have been 2 points for them, and that would have made it an 8-point game, which would have meant it was a one possession game. So that was a really smart kind of heads up decision. They really managed that game very well. And you'd hope they'd be able to manage it coming out of the bye week, but you know, against a good team like the Bucks, and you know, obviously the kind of the pressure that comes with playing against a guy like Tom Brady, sometimes those decisions are harder to make and can get lost. And I think they deserve credit for how they managed that.
Totally, totally. It's going to be an interesting game. This Carolina defense is obviously the strength of their team. It's the third ranked units according to DVOA, which I like to use. It's a more of an efficient stat, and I think for Carolina it's going to be their ability to stop the run and these running backs. I'm not too worried about the pass game. Obviously you have to be worried about McLaurin, but if Carolina can stop the run, then that should kind of allow them to kind of play their brand of defense. But I mean, it's going to be a tough game. I know the spread right now is like 3.5.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently